providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And in this segment, Chad and I are chatting with Mike Larson, editor of the Safe Money Report. And Mike, it's actually been a number of weeks since we had you back on the show. And I realize there hasn't been a whole lot of changes within these markets the last couple weeks. Yeah, we've seen some weakness in the U.S. equity markets, but as we're recording this kind of halfway through the day on Thursday, we're also seeing that rebound in markets. So it in no way was a breakdown. Let's start off by talking about the Fed. There were a lot of central banks that are meeting this week, 12 in total. The Fed is really one of the most important to keep an eye on. However, we did get a couple of the smaller central banks tightening their policy, even going through a rate hike or two. The Fed still seems a little ways away from a rate hike, probably a year at least. But what was your takeaway from what was another pretty boring Fed meeting and statement? Mike, what caught your attention?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is a Fed that's obviously trying to avoid the 2013 scenario where even the mere suggestion from Ben Bernanke that something might need to be done in terms of tapering set off the taper tantrum and everything went hot wild and bond yield shot up and there was turmoil in the stock market and so on. I mean, this is a Fed that's tried to not even take baby steps. I guess you'd call them, infant steps. Is that something you want to go with? Not toddler steps, but infant steps. That's what they're trying to do. So they're very, 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 very gradually introducing the idea that, you know, pretty soon, if nothing changes, we are probably going to announce the start of our tapering, or at least the decision that we will, in fact, start tapering. That's what the September meeting was. It was a meeting to say at the next meeting, if nothing changes, we will decide to start the taper. We won't actually start it, but we'll decide to. So then after November, if nothing changes, maybe they start tapering in December, January, February, and so on, and just go forth from there, dial it back, I don't know, $10 billion a month in terms of bond buying from a $120 billion current pace. We'd have to see exactly how it settles out, but that's what they're doing. They did pretty much preset that as the course unless something changes. Of course, we all know that things can change. I mean, if you get a couple lousy jobs reports in here, we get some other numbers that suggest the economy is dialing back a little bit, especially with some of the fiscal aid that the Biden administration trying to push through is seeming to be on ice now. And just getting caught up squabbling in the political arena. You know, those kinds of numbers could calm down a little bit and the Fed could drag this out or push it out and so on. So it's not set in stone, but they did try and, you know, point in that direction. So that's the main thing that's happening there. Still, the message from interest rates is that we're not going to be doing anything there, at least until later in 2022, possibly 2023. The dot plot, which has sort of their best forecasts, which, of course, are always wrong, but they're still, you know, the current thinking of when they might start doing that. They did sort of increase the pace or move forward the pace at which they think they'll start raising rates and the magnitude by which they will. We've talked before. I tend to be pretty skeptical of this Fed's going to be able to do much with rates without it just, you know, having too much of an economic impact, given all the debt piled on the economy, given some of these demographic and structural issues that long term really kind of put the U.S. in the same place that Japan and Europe and some other advanced economies have been for a long time. So in other words, I think even if the Fed were to start hiking next year, which is probably not my case, I don't think they would start until 2023. But even if they were, it'd be very gradual. And this Fed funds rate cycle, I would be shocked if in this cycle the Fed managed to get rates to anything that starts with a 2. I would be not very surprised at all if they couldn't even get rates to anything that starts with a 1. Meaning, you know, they might, yeah, that would be 4 hikes and, you know, that would be the end of that, or three hikes, 3.5, depending on how you want to measure it. I really think that, again, all those longer term forces argue for any Fed hikes to be gradual, to be pretty small in magnitude, and ultimately for the rate cycle to top out at a pretty low level. And that's what we've seen for the last several cycles. Every time the Fed tries to hike rates, it runs out of steam and the economy gets hit at a point lower than the previous cycle. So it's really just not like, you know, there's nothing like the Volcker days in the early 80s where rates just went up and up and up in big chunks and you ended up at 15, 16, 17%. So that's kind of where we're at. And in the post-Fed environment, the market's been all over the map. First, the bond market loved the Fed idea. Then the bond market hated the Fed idea all in the span of 24 hours. First, gold and silver were fine with it. Then gold and silver hated it. First, the stock market had some volatility. Then stocks decided it was fantastic. So kind of like what we see in the wake of any big number, if it comes to like a jobs release or any big event, something like a Fed meeting, the markets have a hard time sort of settling into what does this mean or deciding what this means for the long term. You get a lot of short term volatility, and that's where we're at right now. If you look at stocks, for example, many parts of the equity market started to stall out and weaken behind the scenes as far back as June and July. Market breadth began to weaken, even though the S&P held up because it was dominated by sort of mega cap technology companies that continued to rise. Now we've seen even some of those companies see some volatility again in the last week or two. And it's just a question of, is this just a quick bout of volatility, then we're off to the races, or is it something more? That's kind of an open question at this point as I see it.
Yeah, Mike, there's a lot of good points there. There's no doubt that we often see these head fakes right after a big data point or after a Fed meeting, and then the markets will turn around and go the exact opposite direction. But to your point, just circling back to the tapering part, I agree with you on the interest rates, that they can't really normalize them up to 3%, 4%, 5% without crushing the market. But most market participants and most analysts do believe that the Fed is going to start tapering. So the question I have is, they're doing $120 billion a month in bond purchases right now. If they dialed that back to 90 and then 60 and then 30 and then zero, who do you think the market for the bonds will be? Who will fill that gap that the Fed has been dumping liquidity into? And how will that affect the bond markets?
Well, I think a lot's going to depend on how much additional fiscal spending, infrastructure, social spending, all the stuff the Biden administration wants to do. A lot's going to depend on how much of that gets through Congress. We've seen some of the initial extraordinary rise in borrowed money and resulting spending, part of the pandemic aid, begin to tail off. Things like enhanced unemployment benefits, all the checks and stimulus money that was being directly borrowed and then dumped into people's accounts. A lot of those programs have expired or been dialed back. And now, we're still talking about a lot of stimulus, but we would need, to really ramp up bond issuance. We would need to see, okay, is this $3.5 trillion more coming down the pike? Is the government going to be able to get, even more, again, social type programs, massive infrastructure, that kind of thing? If it's not, and that kind of stuff has been basically caught in sort of negotiating hell for the last few months, if that stalemate continues, then I think the bond market can handle it without rates backing up too much and issuance going through the roof and the Fed not being there to buy it. However, if the Biden administration does get, to the point where a lot of this stuff is passable and they get it through Congress and they have to borrow more to pay for it, and at the same time you've got, lingering inflation concerns, then you're going to have issues. Then the Fed, if they step back as a buyer, it is going to be an open question as to how we're going to be able to sell and place all these bonds without the Fed being that demand backstop. I think you're always, to some degree, going to get some foreign bid there just because many foreign central banks and other institutional buyers just have to buy the U.S. bond market for liquidity because it offers liquidity, and relative to foreign rates, U.S. rates are still relatively attractive, which is hard to imagine. We were talking about a 1.3, 1.4% 10-year, but again, that compares to even lower rates elsewhere in the developed world. So I don't think you're going to see a bond market crash, but I do think you're going to see, again, if a lot of fiscal comes into the pipeline and a lot of the stalemate is broken there, then that's going to be the real catalyst, I think, for a backup in yields. And we just have to watch and see see how the political arena shakes out there.
So then, Mike, taking all these cross currents and understanding that, look, investors are looking to individual stocks outside of just the broad averages, even though the broad averages have done pretty well, in all fairness, continuing to bounce and continuing to be a buy the dip opportunity. What sectors have you attracted? Where do you see opportunities that also include kind of that safety component?
Sure. I mean, when it comes to like the safe money, the core portfolio, what I'm always looking for is decent yield. So at least as good as the S&P, up to 4 times the S&P. I'm looking for dividend growth, a strong growth rate over the last 3 years. I'm looking for dividend sustainability. Can these companies, do they have the cash flows coming in that they're able to sustain and maintain these dividends, or are the yields too good to be true? These are a couple of the screens that we run on our entire universe of tracked companies. And when we track more than 10,000 U.S. and Canadian companies all the time, pretty much every day we run markets open, we run our model against them. But what I'm finding is that, the kinds of companies that come back passing these screens are in sort of an eclectic mix of sectors. It's not like we saw sort of in 2018, 2019, when we were very late in the economic cycle, even before COVID, and a lot of the names that were showing up were much more defensive, like consumer staples and utilities. Now I'm seeing, some utilities still in there, but I'm seeing REITs, I'm seeing some companies in technology, even some companies in the industrial sector that are coming back and saying, okay, these companies are worth looking at. So it's a little bit more of a mix that I see out there right now. And that's also how I'm playing it for our investors. I'm saying, look, you know, let's have this utility company that's got a good yield. Have this industrial company that's got a good yield and some potential going forward. Let's, you know, mix things up a little bit in technology. There's even a few companies that for the tech sector pay pretty decent yields, particularly in things like semiconductors. So there are ways that you can have a safe money approach that is not just in the super boring type companies, but in those that have a little more growth. And again, that's sort of the hodgepodge of companies now, which just kind of tells you that investors, you know, are still pretty bullish, but again, some of that weakness we saw around the edges, some of that narrowing of breath in the summer still needs to fix itself for this to be a true sort of, you know, straightforward, unquestionable bull market. And that's, you know, that's what we had for about a year coming out of the COVID bottom. And then again, this summer, it did start to tail off in a few sectors.
Well, Mike, just speaking of it, things tailing off in a few sectors, my question would be, you know, I understand the idea behind the safe money side of things and having the dividends and getting paid the yield to ride it out in companies that have a good rating in the WISE system. But what do you think about some of the discussion out there that if we do have a slowdown and that things do keep tailing off, that some of these companies may need to reduce their dividends, especially if growth comes to a screeching halt because of another, you know, shutdown in the wintertime or because of more supply chain interruptions, et cetera, or labor shortages? How do you manage the risk even in the dividend stocks to make sure that these are solid companies and are going to be able to keep paying that dividend moving forward?
Sure. Well, you've got to have some sort of, you know, macro and sort of qualitative view of what's going on in the world on top of what the model tells you. I mean, the model is great. It's a computer, you know, looks at all these different variables, but the model can't tell you if the CEO is crooked, and the model can't tell you if a new product is going to be rolled out next month that's going to lead to a huge boost in sales, and the model can't tell you what the Fed's going to do with interest rates and so on. So that's where myself and the other analysts come in and try and say, okay, you know, this is what, you know, your system is telling you is good, but where do you layer that other analysis on top? And right now, I think, again, that's why I've been keeping in the back of my mind what's going on with breath, why I'm really interested to see what happens in the fiscal arena and sort of the pace of this Fed taper, because all of that stuff is going to come into play. You've got to sort of have an idea, you know, over the next 6, 12, 18 months, are we going to have a big additional fiscal push, or is that going to get derailed? Are we going to see a Fed that's more aggressive, or are we going to see one that's more tame in what it does? And I would say it's looking like fiscal is less likely, and it looks like to me the Fed will be pretty tame relative to what we've seen in past rate cycles. So that tells me you're still safe with a lot of these companies. You're still in pretty good shape. I don't think interest rates are going to soar, you know, right off the bat, and therefore kill all these sectors that traditionally get hit when long-term yields go up. Think REITs and utilities. I also don't think we're going to see, you know, blockbuster enormous growth coming down the pike. So, you know, you don't want the super cyclical stuff. You don't want to be really exposed to that. You want to kind of try and find that happy middle, that fat middle that's doing pretty well for you. And that's, you know, that's where I've been looking.
So, Mike, let's just wrap it up with a quick comment on the precious metals. You already recapped just how volatile they were kind of pre and post Fed meeting. Unfortunately, especially if you look at gold, even silver, the downtrend is continuing. Silver is very close to breaking down out of this year-long range that it's been in, and gold continues to put in lower highs. What's going to drive the metals? What are your thoughts on the precious metals here? Are they finally getting close to a bottom?
Sure. I think that, you know, we still haven't broken the bull market that started in mid-2018. We've had essentially a corrective sideways to down phase for, you know, but gentle. I mean, not any huge collapses for about 12 months now. It's been a year, which is longer than I expected. I'll admit that in terms of how long this correction's running. But I still think, you know, I still think in some cases people are afraid of that. They have that muscle memory, that psychic memory of what happened, you know, in 2012, 2013. 14, when the Fed, you know, really dialed back this taper and then later on hiked, and it's a, you know, really led to a bad, painful situation for gold, silver, and mining shares. I think this is a Fed, and you know, you could substitute in the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan, the ECB, whatever, you know, for the word Fed, and just rotate any of those others in there. I think you're seeing an environment where they all want to be much more accommodative. They want to be much less aggressive in the hiking cycle. Even less aggressive than they were last time or the time before that, especially. So in that environment, I don't think this is going to be some, you know, horrible negative scenario for precious metals. And you just have to run for the hills and so on. But I do think it's certainly been tough to get ahead of the idea that there's going to be at least stalling in that market. And, you know, I think that I'm kind of in a hold pattern. If you had to say, you know, am I a rip-roaring, add more aggressive buyer? No. But am I somebody also is like, oh, geez, I got to sell before the next guy does. And, you know, metals go to, you know, gold goes to 1,500, 1,400. Absolutely not. I'm not in that camp either. So I think that you can kind of bide your time here. If you have a decent allocation, sit with it and look to see if this market can get out of its own way. But again, do I think you need to like really be liquidating because you're afraid of big losses? No, I'm not in that camp either.
All right, Mike, we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks, as always, for taking time on this weekend show and sharing your thoughts. We're going to follow up in another couple weeks, and who knows, maybe it will be a different story for these markets and a different story for metals, but it really does seem like we're just continuing with a lot of these trends that have been in place now for a little while. Mike, thanks, as always, for your time, buddy. We'll chat again in another couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
You got it. Thank you.